It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Governor Tony Evers' new two-year budget blueprint calls for big changes to Wisconsin's prison system. Currently, more than 23,000 adults are incarcerated in the state.
Evers' half-billion-dollar plan would reorganize the state's prison system. At a press briefing, he said his plan would save money.
We'll save Wisconsin taxpayers about $1 billion right up front by not building a new facility that won't help us anytime soon because it won't be done for another decade.
But Assembly Speaker Robin Voss criticized the governor's proposed overhaul at a WISP politics forum on Tuesday.
He didn't really consult any Republicans, which I think was a mistake. We're going to get our own position in the right place first. Then I'm happy to engage Democrats and see if there's areas that we can find bipartisan consensus.
We're joined by two Republicans now. Senator Jesse James serves a district in the northwest part of the state, including Abbotsford and the Rice Lake area. He's vice chair of the Senate's Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. State Senator James, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. And Representative Dean Coffert is here, serves a district in the Fox Valley, including Nina and Menasha. Coffert is chair of the Assembly Committee on Corrections. Representative Coffert, welcome.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Representative Coffert, let's start with you. As chair of the Assembly's Corrections Committee, we have heard Assembly Speaker Robin Voss saying that prison reform is on the table. What is your nine-member committee working on to change prisons in the state?
Well, last week I met with the secretary for the first time, and, you know, just for an overview and talk about the proposal, talk about a lot of things, but the proposal that the governor has put forward. The frustrating thing is, you know, and it hasn't changed since I left some years ago, you know, they don't consult us at all, and then they throw this out there, so we haven't had a chance to fully vet it yet. But the bottom line is, I think that Republicans, you know, are pretty much in agreement, at least the colleagues in my house that I talk to, that it's time that we pull the plug on Green Bay Correctional. And it's an outdated facility. The operating costs are, you know, huge. There's probably better ways to do this. It's a huge jigsaw puzzle, though, in order to get this done with transferring inmates, early release programs, all the pieces of the puzzle that are going to have to be gone through. And so our caucus is going to thoroughly go through this and look. The safety of our citizens throughout the state is still important. So we're not going to have a catch and release program where we just willy-nilly let people out of prison. But the fact is, we're expecting over 24,000 inmates by the end of this biennium, so something's got to be done.
So at a base level, though, you do support closing down the maximum security Green Bay Correctional Institution and moving inmates to other facilities.
Yeah, so far everything I've seen, and I plan on going up to visit it in the next 2 weeks, but you know, everything I hear and see and talk to my colleagues who've been working on this for some time is the fact that it's time that we close that. The village itself has, you know, ideas for redevelopment of that site. So, but in order to do this, a whole series of things has to happen. And the mm-hmm. governor knows how complicated that is because him and I have talked about it. But the fact is that the bottom line is, yeah, it's time to close that facility.
State Senator James, you serve as vice chair of the State Senate's Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. What corrections proposals, what talk is your committee doing at this time?
Well, we haven't had the initial talks, obviously, with this just recently coming out. We're taking a look at it. This obviously does have an impact on our side of the state with the transition of maximum security inmates coming to the Stanley prison. That's
yes.
a prison that I represent. So I did have the conversation with Secretary Hoy. He reached out to me on a Saturday and made me aware of what was going to be coming out, and had a meeting with him this week in the office. The initial discussions are taking place, and obviously, you know, being a police officer still, having public safety in our communities is paramount. But obviously we know that our prisons are over capacity. You know, we have a population of over 23,000 as of February 7th. We can house, 17,638 individuals. So there obviously is an issue there that we need to definitely look at. I'm all for any kind of reform. I'm for closing the Green Bay Correctional Institute and making these modifications and changes, but we definitely all have to come to the table and we have to have the discussion and the communication to do this successful, not just one party taking the lead and doing it all on their own. We're going to have to work bipartisan on this.
Well, help us understand here. If the Stanley Correctional Institution would move from a medium security to a high security prison, would that mean more inmates? What ripple effects would that have on the local community? Can you flesh that out for us?
Yeah, from what I'm hearing is the current population at Stanley, they would be transferred out whether to another medium or even minimum, depending on how close they are to getting out. From what I understand, the majority would be transferred to Waupun, and then the transition from a medium security into a maximum would take place. And then eventually we could even flex it into a medium custody institution as well. So I think there's some opportunity. I know that Stanley also has the capability and ability to potentially grow with the land that they have as well. So I think, you know, keeping all options open and, you know, having the discussions is extremely important to be done.
We are talking with State Senator Jesse James there. Representative Dean Coffert is with us. Two lawmakers involved in efforts to related to corrections committee work there as we discuss proposals for overhauling Wisconsin's prison system. Representative Coffert, you've expressed concerns over the governor's proposed expansion of the earned release program where nonviolent offenders who are near the end of their sentence, they secure their release after completing substance abuse treatment. What concerns do you have?
Well, you know, we're hearing that some inmates don't have access to substance use treatment at this time. So, you know, we've got to expand access to that. We got to bolster workforce training to get people ready to go back into the community. You know, there's nonviolent and non-assaultive people probably who've been convicted of those types of offenses in there. But, you know, are there the numbers that the governor is talking about? I mean, it appears, and he hasn't given us much, you know, detail information yet. You know, how many people are we talking about? Is this a few hundred? In order to make the pieces of the puzzle fit, it appears that, you know, they're going to have to let 1,000 people, you know, get early release or whatever. That's the initial thought that we have. So we just want to make sure that the community stays safe, that, you know, recidivism is kept to a minimum. We don't want to put people that aren't ready for early release, you know, out there. And you know, the public safety is of the utmost importance. But, you know, I was in the legislature when we housed prisoners in Oklahoma and Texarkana and, you know, Oklahoma down south. And so I've seen this story before, and there's a way to do it, but the governor's got to include us. We got to sit down at the table and we got to work in a bipartisan way. This is, you know, the good news is this isn't probably a partisan issue. It's an awful lot of money, but it's probably money that we gotta spend. The last budget, the legislature did a good job of creating additional dollars so that staff is paid adequately, and the vacancy rates are down. So we're working on that program, that problem. But, you know, this is the next set of things that have to fall into place. And, you know, there's a lot of money going into this plan, and there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle.
You mentioned compensation there. I want to turn to State Senator James. You've talked about the compensation of prison officers. Should an aspect of a prison overhaul package address pay for corrections workers or explore other measures to address low staffing issues?
Well, I think we Republicans last budget invested a lot of money into the pay for our corrections officers. That was a huge issue previously coming up through the years. And what we did, the huge investment that we made, I'm not hearing the complaints of a shortage a staffing shortage or anything like that. I'm not hearing any complaints about the pay that they're getting right now. A lot of the workers that I've talked to in Stanley are completely happy with what we have done, getting it into the budget and taking care of them. So I don't think that that's a huge issue right now.
Okay.
I think it's more about getting the inmates taken care of, investing into MAT, medication assisted treatment, investing in mental health, so that we can set these individuals that are eligible, properly eligible to be released, to become contributing members of society. The schooling that's offered, those educational programs that they have at Stanley, for example, are huge, and it sets these inmates up for success when they get out. And I totally support that, and I always will.
So it sounds like you don't want to see those wait lists for earned release participation or vocational programs.
If they're qualified individuals, and you know, it depends on their history, and if they have a violent history behind them, I think we need to do our proper assessment upon release or before they get out, to make sure that they're ready. But otherwise, I don't know what that list looks like, to be honest with you. So that's, I think, part of the conversation that needs to be had, because Representative Crawford just stated, we haven't seen the numbers or the list. So I think that that's going to have to continue to be talked about.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us on this issue. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's a great, great story.
That is State Senator Jesse James, State Senator serving a district in the northwest part of the state, and Dean Crawford, who is a state representative serving the district in the Fox Valley. We've been talking about proposed changes that Governor Evers has put forth to Wisconsin's prison system.
Coming up, as dental therapists get licensed for the first time in Wisconsin, a technical college is preparing to offer the first degree program in the state.
We hope that dental therapists will allow faster access to dental care and more equitable oral health care within the state of Wisconsin.
That's ahead on Wisconsin Today.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. More than a dozen states, including Wisconsin, have authorized the licensing and practice of dental therapists. And last month, the state licensed its first dental therapists.
Working under the supervision of a dentist, they are able to fill cavities and provide other routine dental care.
Wisconsin's dental therapy profession is getting started as dozens of rural counties face a shortage of dentists. State lawmakers have been trying to tackle that issue.
North Central Technical College in Wausau is preparing to offer the first dental therapy program in the state. Laura Ahonen is Associate Dean of Allied Health and Human Services at the college. Laura, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you very much.
Your college received a $2.2 million grant from the state to launch this dental therapy degree program. Can you talk about what stage you're at?
So since receiving new notification that Governor Evers has signed the dental therapy bill, we moved fast. That signing of the bill was just in February of 2024. And in March, we hired a program director. Our program director is a dentist, Dr. William Akey, and we started building our curriculum. So we actually did a lot of research. There are three other dental therapy programs in the country right now, and we looked at their curriculum that they allowed us to access. So based upon the research we did, along with our CODA accreditation standards, we developed the program and the curriculum. We were able to submit our application for accreditation to CODA on August 2nd. So we move very quickly. Alongside of that curriculum build, we also started construction and remodeling of our existing dental clinic. So we have an NTC community dental clinic where we currently house our dental hygiene and dental assistant programs. But what we did was we expanded the clinic to hold 58 operatories. We added on a classroom that will seat 20 students, and it also houses 12 simulators that provide real high definition and high tech learning environments for our dental therapy students. So that construction actually completed in January of 2025.
Wow.
So at the stage we're at now, yeah, we did a lot very fast. We are utilizing the remodeled clinic. We expanded our locker room capacity to house over 160 students. And so we're in the facility, we're in the clinic. We have dental hygiene and dental assistant students right now in the clinic. In fall of 25, we will be adding EFTA students. And for those who haven't heard of EFTA, that stands for Expanded Functions Dental Auxiliary. And EFTA students will begin with us in fall of 25. We are still waiting to hear back on CODA before we can enroll students in our dental therapy program. CODA requires us to obtain initial accreditation status before enrolling students. So we're waiting for the review of our application and waiting to hear back from CODA.
Ultimately, how many dental therapy students might you be able to serve?
We hope that we can enroll 12 students every fall semester.
Where would you recruit these students from? Where would they be coming from?
Well, our recruitment will primarily be within our North Central Technical College District. But we know that if we are not able to recruit 12 students in our district, we would then be able to expand that outreach to anybody within the state of Wisconsin. We've actually been in contact with a couple of folks from Michigan that have an interest, but we need to sort of focus our efforts on our in-district residents and then in-state. And if capacity allows, then we can open it up to out-of-state.
You're launching at a time when dental care, especially in rural areas of Wisconsin, they're seeing a loss of dentists, whether those dentists are retiring, whether there's just a void in some rural areas. Will a program like this be able to improve that situation?
Absolutely. And that is the reason that this program is so important. We know that people struggle to get access to basic dental care, especially in rural populations or rural areas. And so a dental therapist will function similar to a physician assistant and how physician assistants provide that mid-level support in medical health. Dental therapists will be that mid-level provider for oral health. So we hope that dental therapists will allow faster access to dental care, allow access to dental care for those who are underinsured or not insured at all, and really help bridge that gap and provide more equitable oral health care within the state of Wisconsin.
So if your tooth is aching, you really need that cavity filled. A dental therapist could do that procedure.
100% correct, yes. So a dental therapist is trained to the same level as a dentist in about 95 procedures. A dentist is trained to approximately 400 procedures. So the primary goal of dental therapists would be to provide restoratives, so filling cavities, simple extractions of teeth. So to provide a service that will allow an individual to be pain-free, allow them to eat foods again and not be in pain, allow them to have a better overall quality of life.
I wonder, and you talked about Minnesota having an established dental therapy program at the university there, and I think licensing happened over a dozen years ago in Minnesota. Here in Wisconsin, as it starts out, will patients be ready to see dental therapists, or will they have reluctance of not being able to go to a dentist, per se?
So definitely, because this is not only a new program, it's a new career. Mm. We know that one of our biggest challenges is to build awareness and to educate both the public and the dental community about the role of dental therapists. We really need to do outreach and education to answer those questions as to how dental therapists fit into the existing system. And we have done 3 listening sessions where we've tried to provide that education to let people know that a dental therapist will be trained to the level of a dentist in the procedures that fall within their scope of practice. And we do know that in Wisconsin at this time, when the licensure through DSPS has come out, there are a handful of dental therapists already practicing in Wisconsin. And so I think it will take time and a lot of outreach, education. But I think we will also partner with our local clinics, and we will partner with dental facilities and partnering and providing student education opportunities within the dental community. I think that will also help educate patients and dentists as to what dental therapists can do.
Have you heard from any of the new dental therapists who have been recently licensed here in Wisconsin?
We have. It was interesting. I received a phone call from a dental office who just hired a dental therapist. The dental therapist came from Minnesota, and the offer was made basically saying, let us know how we can help your program, because it's needed. It can fill a big void. And so that was a really great thing. I mean, this was, again, it's a very new career in Wisconsin. So to receive that phone call a couple of months ago, it provided us some reassurance that, okay, there are people accepting this. And it was really cool to hear that there is a dentist that has already hired a dental therapist and has that person working in her clinic.
Because I'd imagine some of your education also has to do with educating dental clinics that, you know, they can be prepared to hire dental therapists when they have in the past probably focused on recruiting dentists.
Yes, that is very true. One of our educational sessions we did, we actually asked 2 providers from Appletree Dental in Minnesota. One is a dentist and one is a dental therapist. And they came in and presented to our audience on how dental therapy has impacted their clinics in a positive way. It has reduced wait times for patients. And even though the dental therapist is primarily serving the Medicaid or underinsured population, it has still boosted revenue for that clinic. And the clinic was able to justify the salary of the dental therapist because of the number of procedures the therapist was able to perform.
We're talking about the launch of Wisconsin's first dental therapy degree program with Laura Ahonen. She's Associate Dean of Allied Health and Human Services at North Central Technical College in Wausau. Laura, in terms of billing and insurance, are dental insurance companies in Wisconsin prepared to cover procedures done by a dental therapist, or do you anticipate any issues with insurance policies?
I don't anticipate any issues, mainly because Wisconsin has created a dental therapy license. And within that Senate Bill 689, the scope of practice is defined. And so because it's a licensed profession, we hope that it will be accepted as a provider, a mid-level provider in healthcare, such as a physician's assistant. If a person goes for medical care and they are treated by a physician's assistant, there really isn't any difference in coverage from the insurance standpoint. And so we anticipate it will be very similar in the oral healthcare.
You know, going to dentistry school, I imagine it's rigorous, it's hard to get through it. How will you support your students as they go through also a rigorous, perhaps several years in this program?
We have, at NTC, that is one of our strengths, is we have a very all-encompassing campus-wide support system for students. So academically, the support will be given through our partnering with dental clinics across Wisconsin. The partnerships would not only help provide clinical training opportunities for students, but we hope that they would also create a direct pipeline to employment after graduation. As a campus, NTC also provides numerous non-academic supports, everything from scholarship opportunities. We have a social worker. We have access to 24/7 mental health services. We just have a really big wraparound service for our students. So we not only provide, again, academic support, but we also cover a lot of non-academic support needs as well. We have a food pantry on our campus. We have clubs and social activities for students to join. So the environment at NTC is really designed to look at the student holistically and provide mental health, social, academic, and whatever support a student needs, we try and meet that.
Will this be a longer technical degree program compared to other programs that you offer? I mean, I'm thinking about 3 years or like 7 semesters here and achieving associate's degree in that time, not gaining a full baccalaureate degree. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So dental therapy must be accredited by CODA. And CODA does not define the type of terminal degree a dental therapist must earn. However, CODA does state that the program must be 3 academic years in order to fully prepare the student for the competencies required in the workforce. So we did, in order to maintain our, or, you know, in order to achieve our CODA accreditation, we must follow those standards and deliver the program in 3 academic years. What we have done to assist the students in getting out to the workforce a little bit sooner is we took a look at our curriculum and included some summers in between the fall and spring semesters so that by going year-round in the summers, we were able to shorten that up a little bit. So the students are actually with us for 2.5 calendar years.
I wonder, will the Wausau community benefit in all this? Will community members perhaps achieve better oral health because of the expansion of your dental clinic?
Absolutely. And I can answer that by just what I know with the phone calls that we get for our existing dental hygiene clinic. So as I mentioned earlier, we've had a dental hygiene program for many, many years. Right now, we have over 400 patients on our dental hygiene waiting list.
Wow.
And that's not including those phone calls where we can't even put them on a waiting list because the person needs more than a tooth cleaning. They need an extraction or a filling, and we currently cannot provide that service. So for those patients, it's been very difficult to turn them away and say, we can't treat you here. We have a dental hygiene program, but we're really looking forward to the day when those phone calls come in and we can say, yes, we can see you. We have a dental therapy program. We can provide that need for you. So we get hundreds of phone calls a month from patients who were their last resort. They don't know where else to call. And we are really looking forward to the time where we can provide some assistance for those people. But again, with a wait list of over 400 patients, and this is in Wausau, I have no doubt that this is a needed service.
You've been at North Central Technical College for years and years now. Have the waiting lists been this lengthy in the past?
Yes. This has been an issue and it has continued to grow. And we are seeing it at its highest point right now. But this is not a new issue for us. So this is something that is long past overdue as far as a need.
The college has been moving so fast to get this program off the ground. What are your next steps in getting the dental therapy program going?
Well, we are awaiting our CODA accreditation review. And once our curriculum and our application is reviewed by CODA, then CODA will send a team to do an on-site visit. So after our site visit and working with CODA, we hope to receive initial accreditation, and then we can enroll students. But we know it is in the horizon. So because we know that, we are also simultaneously looking for additional faculty to join us. As I stated earlier, we have one program director, but we also are looking for a full-time dental therapist to join us as a faculty member. Our construction and our remodeling, our additions, our new purchases, those are all being completed. So we're ready to go as far as a facility and as far as equipment. So it's a little bit of accreditation and some staffing that those are our next steps.
Laura, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Laura Ahonen is Associate Dean of Allied Health and Human Services at North Central Technical College in Wausau. The college is preparing to open the first dental therapy degree program in Wisconsin.
WPR's one-day member drive is next week. You can get us off to a head start. When 600 donors give before then, a group of generous current members will add in $10,000. Join in with your gift right now at wpr.org/donate, and thanks. Coming up on Wisconsin Today, go behind the scenes with an improv comedy and theater group in Milwaukee.
It's the magic of the performers believing it and realizing it, and that allows the audience to invest and realize it as well.
Yes, and that's coming up next here on WPR News.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Modern improv is a decades-old type of theater where performers make up scenes, conversations, and characters unscripted and completely on the spot.
A Milwaukee group wants to bring new people into this art form with outreach to communities not seen as often on the improv stage.
Members of the Interchange Theater Co-op recently started the New Voices Scholarship, inviting people of color, people with disabilities, and LGBTQ community members to attend classes and create performances for free.
Producer Mackenzie Crummy has the story.
So what you're hearing there is a sample of improv from Milwaukee's Interchange Theater Co-op. And yes, no joke, those lyrics, that harmony, and the dynamic of these two performers are made up right on the spot.
That's right, I almost forgot about your allergy.
I'm in Westtown at one of the oldest churches in the city. It has Cream City brick and a 200-foot tower. But not everything that happens here is church-like.
Think of it like an orgasm. You're building up this tension in the scene, and you have to sweep, because then otherwise you'll lose it. It's like then you're all just kind of floundering around. Like
that is Vince Figuero. He is the education director of the Interchange Theater Co-op in Milwaukee. He is giving feedback to a group of performers on a skit about a long line with a person spending way too much time in a porta potty.
Yes?
Are you almost done in there?
It hasn't even been that long. It's only been like 30 minutes. Wait your turn, loser.
This is the only porta potty at the entire festival. Other people need to go.
Yeah, and I made the mistake of eating from the bean burrito truck. What more do you want from me?
The Interchange got started in 2021. It is the first improv co-op in the city. Right now, they are working to diversify the art form, which has traditionally been made up of white performers.
I don't think I performed with comedians of color
until college. Mia Serafina is the director of community and culture at the Interchange. She helped start the New Voices Scholarship, which is a completely free scholarship for people of color, people with disabilities, or members of the LGBTQ plus community. She started the scholarship after performing a show with only Hispanic performers. It was called Hispanic at the Wisco.
Well, if you're also sad that your parents decided to leave their country for a very cold wasteland, come this Saturday to the Interchange Theater Co-op. We'll watch an amazing ensemble of Hispanic performers.
I'm on stage with other Hispanic comedians, and it was such a difference that I didn't know how badly I needed. Even just like kind of the cultural comfortability of, you know, I made like a Selena Yolanda reference and the audience got it. And it was just like, it's another level of comfort that I had never been used to.
Mia said there is a freedom in performing with people like her. She can make cultural references and create characters that are similar to her Chilean abuela who once met Che Guevara at a plaza but never told anyone until a random Easter brunch. And she said she gets to play around with language.
We were kind of in a scene and, you know, somebody's like, oh my God, that person just gave me a new nickname. Pendejo. I've never heard that before. Like just those little moments that like privately make us really crack up.
In the New Voices application process, people are asked questions like, have you ever overcome a difficult moment using humor? Or who do you look up to find comedy and joy? Once a person is awarded the scholarship, they receive 8 weeks of free improv classes and get a chance to perform in the 100-person theater on North 10th Street. So far, the scholarship has had 5 recipients, including JC Diaz.
I didn't know much about improv, honestly. Like, I didn't know what it was or what is it. I thought improv was like stand-up where you just stand up and do jokes and just talk. But it was more about being creative with acting and being intrusive, I would say.
Hey, Mac.
Hey,
got your laxative delivery.
Oh, Kenny, you're a lifesaver.
Of course. I don't know why you get the chocolate ones. They must taste really terrible in your burritos.
Well, you heard of a mole, right?
Oh, you're right. You're right.
I like the spontaneous thing about it. That's what I really fell in love with, is because you have so many thoughts throughout your whole day, and then when you're actually doing it, it's like you're saying those thoughts out loud. It might be good, it might be bad, it might be funny, it might be naughty. It's whatever comes out to your mind.
Building on whatever comes up is a key part of making an improv skit work. And it goes for the whole group, too. With the help of the New Voices Scholarship, the Interchange hopes to keep delivering opportunities and, of course, laughs.
You know, everyone, I just have to say, I really love it when a plan comes together.
See? Yeah!
Mackenzie Crummy, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And special thanks to technical director Sarah Hopeful, who created the sound design for that piece. So what goes into making improvisation work on the stage? Vince Figaro is teacher and education director of the Interchange Theater Co-op in Milwaukee. He's here to talk about long-form improv 101. Vince, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Now, people might be familiar, might have even seen on TV, shorter form comic improv. You specialize at Interchange, I understand, in longer form improv. Talk a little bit about that and how it's different, apart from, you know, being longer.
Yeah, so long form improv focuses more on scenes. So some shows could end up being kind of like a short play, and that all is derived from a single suggestion from the audience. And then the performers will make up a series of scenes based on that one word, as opposed to short form, which is based more in games. There's a lot of guessing games, rhyming games. They do some scenes, but those tend to be generally shorter, whereas a long form show can go up to 40 minutes.
It sounds a little intimidating to me, Vince. You get up on stage, you're going to up there 30, 40 minutes, and you don't know what's coming. What draws you to that?
Well, the best thing about improv is it's a team sport. So I'm on stage with friends and people I know and trust, and we're all there working together to get that next laugh and move on to the next big idea. Whereas something like stand-up comedians have... Boy, they are the bravest people in the world because they are on stage. And if you bomb, it's all on you. But in an improv scene, If it doesn't go great, you can sweep and start a new scene and you'll win the audience back. But yeah, you have that team with you. Before we start a show, we always hit each other on the back. We say, got your back, because we are there to support one another. And by making our teammates look good, we make ourselves look good and we produce a good show.
I think there might be an assumption that this is something somebody's either going to be good at or they're not. Well, here you are. You're teaching people and you took classes yourself. What goes into improv education? How can people learn to do it better?
Well, the big thing is we're teaching primarily adults, and we're just teaching adults how to play well together with one another, because it is just a big, at the end of the day, it's just a big game of make-believe, pretend, and we're all agreeing on the same world that we're creating as we go. We're building this make-believe car that runs on elephant ears down the highway, and we're trying to keep it all together. So it's really getting adults to listen to one another, acknowledging what was said previously, and what was said previously is the reality, and we have to acknowledge that. If you and I are doing a scene and we set up a table in the middle of the stage and then one of us walks through that table, boy, oh boy, that just makes for some hard times. So it's really getting people to visualize with their imaginary listening of the visual. And then, of course, really acknowledging what other people are saying. And there's this whole concept of yes and, which makes up the basis of all improv, short form, long form. And that's yes, acknowledging what your scene partner has set up, and then you anding or adding to it, building on top of that, building the world together.
All right, let's stay with yes and. That's a key, as you just said, to improv. Here's some audio. This is a scene from Interchange where a group of performers, they're executing a heist. They're in a sewer filled with goo. They need to escape with their prize of a yearbook. Here's a listen.
Look, we got past the guard. We're in the sewer. Let's find that yearbook and get out of here. I want to get paid.
All right. Like I said, we need a boat to go down the sewer water. So I'll animate it with the goo in the water. Okay? Does that make sense?
That made absolutely no sense, but I'm more of a visual learner. So why don't you just show me?
Well, I had to animate something, and I've decided this boat that's just down here already. I'm going to animate that.
Wait, why don't we just get in the boat?
Do you have a paddle?
All right.
Wait, no one brought a paddle?
And you call this scene, Vince, a good example of yes and. Talk us through that.
Right. So someone comes up with an idea of, okay, we're in a sewer. Yes, we are in a sewer. And we need a boat. Okay, yes, we'll animate this boat with goo, if I remember the scene correctly. I should note that as a performer or even someone watching improv, you sound like a crazy person trying to explain what happened in an improv scene. It's not like a play or a sketch where it's like, oh, that all makes logical sense. In the moment, trust me, listeners, that made absolute sense. But yeah, so you get one person to exclaim something, and then, yes, we build on top of that. Yes, we need a boat. And it's going to be made of goo. And we have to move the boat somehow, so we need a paddle. So it's just working together. There's setting up from one performer and then agreeing on that being the reality, and then you can move on to the next issue, or you can make the matter worse.
Now, getting to, again, to the training to prepare for a scene like that, our producer Mac says you have a warm-up that you're going to run through some with me. Now, she sent me a link to what it is. I didn't watch it because I wanted to come in cold. I don't know what I'm getting into here. Can you take us through an improv warm-up with me?
Sure. So usually our improv warm-ups, there's a group of people, and we're all standing in a circle, and there's multiple warm-ups we can do. So one that is, I think, easier to do in our current format here is...
Because we can't see each other.
Yeah, we can't see each other, and we're not in the same room together. But it's a warm-up called Five Things, and it's just a good way to kind of get the mind going. And these can be real. You can make them up. So I'll ask you five things, and then you name off five things. And then you can ask me five things. So the example I'd give to you is five things you shouldn't ask the governor in an interview.
Five things I shouldn't ask the governor in an interview. And we want to keep it clean here, of course. wow. So, okay. So here it is. I'm drawing a blank right off the bat. Let's see. How's it going? I probably wouldn't start there with the governor of the great state of Wisconsin or any state. You think you're better than me? No, I wouldn't go there. What are you, some kind of tough guy? I wouldn't ask that. Well, that's three only so far.
Yeah, that's three. You're good.
What's the capital of Mesopotamia? And, hey, look at this mole. Do you think this is bad?
Five. Okay. Things. You did it.
All right. So I will say, in that first moment, I felt the pressure. You know, as a radio person, I don't want to not have something to say. And I was blanking there at first. So is doing this kind of exercise routinely before you're out there on stage in front of people, this kind of gets people ready to do the improv?
Right, because you're just making it up as you go. And then in that exercise, after you'd say each thing, the rest of the team supports you by saying 1, 2, 3. We count up with you. And then when you reach the fifth thing, we go 5 things. We say it all together. So it's that it's that support element as well. So you're coming up with these fun ideas, and then we are then supporting you in those ideas.
Now, let's get back on stage here. We've been doing a long form improv, but it's got to end sometime. And the slang there is the sweep. How do we know when it's time to sweep, to be done with the scene? Who's making that call?
Oh, yeah. The sweep is one of the hardest things to teach people because it really just comes down to feel. And kind of like, you know, you've been doing radio, you get a feel for how an interview is going or how a show in general is going for you. So we kind of get that feeling in an improv scene as well. There's a general build of energy and ideas. We heighten things as we go along in a scene. If you want to think of it kind of like a three-act structure, you know, the second act is where all the action builds. So there's that building tension. And then when we finally get that release, the biggest laugh, that's when you want to sweep because we've reached the height, the zenith of the scene. So that just comes down to a feel thing. And boy, oh boy, can that be hard for students and even veterans to find as well, because there's no hard and fast rule. Whenever someone walks on stage and says, oh no, an alligator ate my foot, that's when we sweep the scene. It all depends on how we built up to that moment. Is it earned? Does this feel like we've reached it. We can't go any higher right now. And if that's the real feeling, then what we say is follow your feet. Because you build that instinct and you just got to trust yourself and you sweep. That's when someone runs across the stage and that makes an edit point where the audience is like, yeah, that was hilarious. And they'll applaud and then you'll move on to the next scene.
And Vince, before I let you go, can you make a pitch for people to go, even if they're not going to participate, but to go check out an improv show, long or short form?
Yeah, so at the Interchange, we have shows every Friday and Saturday. And in addition to our own improv shows, we have stand-up comedians who come into our space and they put on a lot of fun variety themselves. And our improv shows often have a theme associated with them. I think when this airs, we'll have a show coming up called Swiftprov. So for all you Swifties out there, there's a show just for you. All Taylor Swift themed. That is one of our shows. It's a lot of fun. We have a show for if you're a fan of Sherlock Holmes, a big mystery like that. If you're a fan of garbage TV, we have a show called The Fake Housewives of MKE. So like, there's a lot of thematic build into our show. So if you're not familiar with improv itself, you are probably familiar with some of the genres that we are tackling with our shows.
Vince, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Vince Figuero is Education Director of the Interchange Theater Co-op in Milwaukee.
So if you're a fan of the classic card game Euchre, we want to hear from you.
The World Euchre Championship is coming up this spring in New Glarus, bringing together competitors from around the state and around the country.
And next week, we'll get a preview of the event. And then in the meantime, we want to hear your Euchre stories, Rob.
Did you grow up with the game like I did? Was it a required part of family gatherings like it was for me? Do you play now with friends, family, or in a club?
Tell us about it. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org. Or you can call or text to get in touch with us at 888-642-0232.
Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at WPR.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to WPR News.